Thank you so much for joining us for this special series, On the Brink of Death with Sachinandan Swami. We're very, very excited that we get to have your presence and his. So we are here for the next hour, and for those of you who can stay afterwards, you're most welcome for an additional half an hour. The purpose of this program is it's within a broader program that we run called Remembering Who We Are, to be in touch with our real self, the soul. Instead of identifying with our mind and ego as we habitually do, to identify with the deepest part of ourselves, to live from that place and to offer that out to others. And at the beginning of the pandemic, we were wondering what is the best service we can offer in these troubled times. And we felt that this was really the heart of it. So we are graciously celebrating our 1 year anniversary with the honor of our special guest speaker, Sachinandan Swami. And On the Brink of Death is about experiences that Sachinandan Swami has had in life-threatening situations where the soul was still present. And how inspiring is that, that when we're faced with the greatest adversity, when we are challenged beyond belief, we can still be in touch with that deepest part of ourselves. So our hope is that we all receive that inspiration throughout our daily lives, in spite of whatever challenges, that we can live as we are, remembering who we are. The format will be that Sachinandan Swami will share a story, and then if there's time at the end, we'll have a chance perhaps to ask some questions. And otherwise, for those who'd like to stay after, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll transition into Q&A for a half an hour. So you can send your questions throughout the program to Vipin. You can direct message Vipin with any questions that you have as we are listening to the story. And a couple of points on the culture, that we ask for your full heart participation. That means we value your complete presence, your undivided attention. That will be the best experience for you, no doubt, to take these teachings to heart. And it will also affect the full group. And you may think that your presence, your energy is just about you, but actually it has an incredible effect on everybody else. So let us bring that intentionality and be really in a receiver's mindset. It also helps very much to turn on your video. We would also love to see you and experience this community in that way. So please, if you can turn on your video and keep your video on, that's a great benefit. Respect, just being mindful that this is a safe space and a sacred space. Let us be as respectful as possible. And determination, that we don't want things to go in one ear and out the other. We want to actually take this experience with us. That is so important. We can't emphasize it enough. It requires determination that we want to live by what we are receiving today. So Sachinandan Swami is my guru. It's the greatest honor to be able to share his presence, his spirit, his teachings with you. And he's somebody who's traveled around the world teaching from the bhakti tradition. He's been a practitioner and a monk for 50 years now and has so much to share. So we're really excited. He's also a writer and a kirtan musician. So I would love to turn it over to you now for the experience at hand. Thank you so much, Sachinandan Swami. Thank you so much to everybody who is present. I think you may be muted.
I would like to welcome all of you affectionately to this third episode of On the Brink of Death. as our host has primed us, we can get a lot out of the experience of someone else without necessarily having to undergo the same experience. It's a much more simpler and maybe less painful way of learning. So I will try really in my level best to give you an experience through hearing, so that you might not have to have the same experience in the three-dimensional reality in order to come to similar realizations. Today I would like to share with you an experience I had of almost drowning. It has permanently impacted me, so much so that sometimes in the midst of the night when I wake up, somehow my body feels as if it is in the same movements. What this means will become very clear as you listen. As a little preface, I would like to say most people in this world experience something like an empty spot in their lives and in their hearts, and they try their level best to fill this empty spot. There are various distractions that are available, various diversions, but very often the spot cannot, the emptiness cannot be cured, because it is such an existential emptiness. It comes because we feel consciously or subconsciously abundant, given up, all alone, dependent only on our own skills. This feeling of abandonment brings people often to spiritual paths. It brings them to inquire about means to stop that isolation, that existential isolation. But very often, they only are confronted with a silence from the other side that makes them even more desperate. I have met many people who have tried their best on spiritual paths who just couldn't go on with fortitude because they felt the silence of God so painful that they were not willing to continue their path. What I'm going to share with you is something to make you look on this another time. Something that might give you the conviction, yes, there can be responses. Yes, there can be clear directions from a place outside of us, from a place which some of us would not hesitate to call a divine place. It was maybe 18 years or so ago when I was invited for a lecture tour to the Canary Islands, very specifically. Amongst all the five islands, I was invited to Tenerife. I remember landing on the airport and my host was waiting before in the car. And after we had greeted each other, I was driven through such an exotic, beautiful forest. There were flowers, big flowers on the trees. There were palm trees, and next to it, there were these hanging plants on which Tarzan would swing back and forth. It was very beautiful. And that scene came up again when I was in dire need to catch on something very beautiful. When I arrived at my host's place, I was given a printed schedule and it was full. My God, was it full. 3 lectures minimum a day, some in yoga studios, some in local town halls, some in communes of people who lived there. I think I never had such a full schedule in my life, and there was hardly any time to focus on the beautiful island. I kept on remembering that drive through that forest with the trees, but it was only a spotlight of remembrance. I would go from program to program to program. The only exception of lecturing to a big crowd, to a good crowd, large crowd, was when I visited this farm where they grew the medical plant aloe vera. It is done for skin rashes and for any you use it for any skin irritations. That was the only touch with nature I had, and it was not even nature in its full bloom. It was just a farm, a medical farm. So one morning I remember I said, "Stop! I'm in Tenerife. This is a place where from all over the world people come to admire the fauna and the flora, but more than anything, the beautiful ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, which is right, you know, surrounding this island." And I said, "I come from an island also. I was born in Hamburg, but I grew up for the first part of my life on this beautiful ocean-girded island called Fehmarn. I will have a swim today." And I told my host that you have filled my schedule too full. I need a little respite. I need to swim in the ocean. You please arrange this between lectures. So, and I want, what is it called? Diving googles, because I want to see the richness of the underwater flora. I want to be here. I don't just want to skip through Tenerife. I want to make contact here. So, okay. I still remember I stood on a rocky beach with a bathing pants, and I put my diver's goggle on, and I was going carefully into the water because it was very rocky. There were rocks coming out of the water left and right. I found a place and I put my exhausted body into the water, and all of this made a few swimming moves, and I still remember a feeling that, my God, with a few simple swimming strikes, I'm really moving fast. But I did not yet know what was the reason, nor did I suspect it. I saw the landscape almost rushing by me. See, on the left and right side, there were these rock formations, and strong, I just was going through them as if I had a motor. I thought, see, this is the pent-up energy which comes when you just sit and talk, and now it comes all out in a volcanic eruption. That is so. That is the reason why you're so fast. I still joke with myself inside. Maybe I should register for the Olympic Games because I'm really fast, you know. I was totally innocent of what was the actual situation. Ignorant, I would now say. So I fanned out really fast. It was really amazing how fast everything went. And then I decided I'm far enough out. The land was very much in the distance, and turned around to swim back. And I noticed I was not able to swim back to the coast. As I said to you, I'm a decent swimmer, maybe middle class, between middle class and high class, really not scared of water. So I put more effort in it and used a swimming style which is the most efficient for me. But I did not move. Instead, I felt I was pulled out towards the high sea. Now my intelligence told me, oops, maybe you went into water when there was a tide, a low tide, you know, when there's a reflux of water. I said, the worst thing now is to panic. But my dear people, when you feel existentially threatened, your intelligence is not able to override the fear which comes from a deep place inside, an uncharted territory, a territory where all your worst speculations about what could go wrong reside. And all this came at me. I began to panic. I started to swim faster. Then the sea got a little choppy, and it was not so easy to keep my head over the head. And then more panic came, and I started to vomit. Now, I know there are ladies on the call and gentlemen. I want to spare you the detail. All I can say is I was swimming in a white substance, and I was swallowing a salty water. My first reaction was, as things got worse and I lost control of the situation, oh no, I can't imagine this to be my end. I remember at strong resistance, a strong denial. It can't be that a monk who has been spurred to practice for a few decades is now dying like an ordinary, foolish German tourist. Yes, tourists in Spain, the German tourists in Spain are not getting very complimentary words. They're called cuadratos, like squareheads, because they are so determined to get a good 10, that they end up red like tomatoes after already the second day. So to die like a German tourist is something that is so disgraceful. I had imagined my end to be, you know, okay, I'm somewhere in a holy place in Vrindavan, and I'm saying my last words. I'm surrounded by other monks who sing sacred names and sacred hymns. And then I say, good, I want to die like a monk. Take me out of the bed and place me on the dust of Vrindavan as a sign, a gesture of utter surrender to divine will. But not like this in the ocean. I was really angry. I was angry, first of all, that this looked like my end. I don't know if any one of you has almost drowned. I mean, those who drowned, we can't ask them, but the almost drowned, it's your lungs fill with water, you can't breathe, and your mind is absolutely not under your control and goes to places which are really informed by your worstest of fears. At least that happened to me. And I remember after this phase of being angry, I resigned to my destiny, especially because by now the waters were really high, and it was, I don't remember if I kept my head over the water. I only remember it was really waves. Sometimes over, I think I must have been over the water, but most of the time under the water. And then another thought came. And I strongly believe that came because of my spiritual practices. I calmed down. The panic was over. And I thought, of course it was still a very fearsome thought, but I thought, is there anything now that everything has left me? I'm here in the water. There is no one around me. There's no help to be expected. I'm so far away from any surveillance, and no one. And it's the receding tide. It's the infamous ebb. Is there in all this helpless situation one thing I could do? I mean, I had already exhausted the possibility of swimming and saving my life with skillful swimming techniques. And all I could do is, I could say a hesitant and weak-hearted semblance of a prayer. If you are there, then please make sure that in my last minutes here on earth, I am in your presence. Something that solaces the soul. Then I heard a voice, not a vocally communicated voice, not something that is audible through the ears, but something that directly went to the center of my mind without needing sound vibration. I will send waves. Whenever a wave comes, try to swim with that wave, use the wave. And when the wave goes and overtakes you, at that time, do not struggle with the ocean. Wait for the next wave. I had resigned to die. There was not a lot of life in my body any longer. The will to live was also not strong any longer. It was just a vague hope. Maybe there's a way out of here. When I heard or perceived this communication, I became like a child whom you give an order to do this now, and who, oh yes, and who has no doubts, who just does it. Those of you who have children or have been with children know how absolutely trusting the children are, and then there is really nothing in their mind except this one instruction which you have given to them. So I became very simple, and the wave, first wave came. It was a wave out of the laws of the ocean, you know. It was a straight wave with not so much length or width, you would say, width. It was a wave for me. It was my wave. And as the wave was there, it was a mass of water. It was a big wave, not a very pointed wave, a wave which was just a massy wave. If this makes sense to people who are surfers out there. And I could swim and stay with that wave, but it was much faster than me. It overtook me. Then the ebb again grabbed my whole body and pulled me back. And I had so much anxiety, but I remember I had an instruction, don't fight with the ocean. So I allowed myself to be pulled back and saved my strength for the next wave. And it came. And I went back. I went with the wave towards the land. But remember, it was very far away, the land. It was only a vague thing in the horizon. And in this way, I don't know how long it took. In my memory, it is 30 meters I went forward and 12 meters I was pulled backwards. 30 meters forward. So I was going meter by meter towards the coast. Finally, after what seemed to me an eternity, I could touch with my feet these rocks. I cut myself on the sharp rocks. I didn't mind. I would not give up my hold on these rocks for anything, even if I would be cut 1,000 times. And I, with the feet and with the arms, went up to the coast. And it was not really a beach, it was rocks, you know. And there I broke down. I still remember, I was on all my four fours. Then I trembled. Then I again needed to do this, you know, vomiting. But nothing came out any longer. But it continued, the cramps continued. And then I broke down and fainted. Again, I do not know how long I was there. All I remember is that after some time, I heard the voice of my host. He was there. And I came up and I did not believe I was alive in this reality, which many of us call the real world. I did not think I was there. My host gave me a towel and then a warm bathing, you know, a coat. I was still trembling. He asked 1,000 questions and I gave no answer because it took my senses some time to again adjust to the world. All I remember is after 20 meters of walking, I saw a sign. And it was round. And in the sign, there was a swimmer. There was a red border all around on the outer edge of the sign. And then there was a red big line as big as this, crossing the swimmer, meaning, do not swim here. Absolutely do not swim. I had overlooked that sign. I had only eyes for the ocean and my frustration to be just stationary in all the lectures and no exercise, no movement, no contact with nature. And I don't know, when I saw that sign, I was shocked. I do not remember any communication with anyone. I only remember I was at one stage in the warm bed. Someone, the host or people who were nearby had found a warming bottle, a hot water bottle, because the body was pale. I remember I woke up one time and I was going in my bed back and forth, 30 meters forward, 12 meters backwards, going up and bopping down with the waves. This experience had just eaten into my nerve system. And for many, not maybe many, no, I would say 2 weeks or so, I would wake up in the night and I would feel like a helpless little thing on the waves, popping up and popping down. That didn't leave me. I have often thought about this. I have taken two essential lessons for my life that I take into the now and the here. My dear people, we are surrounded by nature, and nature is overwhelmingly strong. In Germany, we have a few very good writers. One of them, a mystic, she was a lady, an abbess. That's a female person who looks over a monastery of nuns. She was a philosopher, but also a healer. Maybe some of you have read her literature, Hildegard von Bingen, or pronounced in American English word, Hildegard of Bingen, something like this. She expressed very poignantly the ocean or the nature. She addressed the nature as a female person, the materia. She is so bright and she is so glorious that you cannot look at her face or her garments for the splendor with which she shines. For she is terrible with the terror of the avenging lightning and gentle with the goodness of the bright sun. The two faces of material nature. Maybe at the moment you in America and everywhere experience her terrible form, you know, her overwhelming form in the form of a small little thing that is not even traceable with the naked eye. But she's also gentle with the goodness of the bright sun. And both her terror and her gentleness are ultimately incomprehensible for humans. But she is with everyone and in everyone. And so beautiful is her secret that no person can know the sweetness with which she sustains people and spares them in inscrutable mercy. For me, as a spiritualist, nature is like a glove which is put over the hand of God. And that hand can carry us, but if necessary, it can also give us make-up lessons. This was the first lesson which I had. The second was something which is not easy for me to express in words. Like all of us, I know what is emptiness in the heart. Like all of us, or many of us, I know of the longing for fullness. And maybe as a spiritual person, I call this the longing for God. And like all of us, I know of the painful silence. No matter how much you try, no matter how much I fought in that ocean, no matter how many swimming tactics I memorized and tried to put into action to help me. And no matter how much I prayed at that session when I had resigned myself to bear the silence and with it the uncertainty of life was very, very difficult. But then, as I really went into communication, something happened. The silence was broken. There's one prayer which precedes all other prayers. There's one sincere call that precedes all calls. There's one longing that comes before all longing. If it is real, if your prayer is real, if your call is real, if your longing is real, the prayer or the utterance preceding all is, let the real me speak. Not the concepts, not the beliefs, not even the good faith, the real me, the threadbare me, if this is an English expression at all. The me which is laid threadbare, when there's nothing else any longer. If you want the silence to stop, if you want the feeling of being alone, being abundant ultimately, being on your own to end, you have to call from the heights of your being, the depths of your being, the width of your being, and the length of your being. What I mean is, you have to put everything in. That's the heights of your being. The depths of your being is you have to draw into your awareness whatever it is that you have realized. The lengths of your being, I mean, be patient. It can take some time before something comes and something changes. And what was it? Width of your being, the breadth, you know, that means just don't think only of yourself. I must admit, when I was drowning, I only thought of my own benefit. But now I'm out of the water, and I do Compassion Tuesdays. That is, every Tuesday I do a program where I invite others to come and access within themselves this deeper feeling of compassion, where you don't just care for yourself, but mainly for others, and you send well wishes for them. Yes, this is the experience and the lessons I had on the Canary Islands. I hope I could do a good job by trying to make the experience as close to you as possible, and by trying to also bring you into what it felt like when I made the experience. What were my thoughts, or my thoughts is not the right word. What was going on inside, I think, is the right word. It's a lot of things which went on inside. But I want to encourage you, if you make sure that the real you is active, miracles can happen. We live in a society where we often compare each other to the activities of others. Oh, I wish I would be as intelligent as Rasanat. I wish I would be as warm-hearted and well-educated as Hari Prasad. When I compare myself with others, at that moment, I set myself up for misery, because I will never be like others. But when I go inside and be like me, when the real me is active, then we have a good chance that the whole world will start to move differently. When you touch that core, that is good. Therefore, I really like this overarching title, Becoming Who We Are. Do I say it correctly?
Remembering Who We Are.
Remembering Who We Are. No? Then I really think this little title, four words only, can maybe save our lives, because this is exactly what came to me as, I could only say, saving grace, no? That I went away from all these troubled thoughts and I did the connection. I entered the connection. I could understand, yes, I'm a tiny being at the moment overwhelmed by the much more powerful ocean. and from that place, I called for help, and the help came. The ocean became a friendly ocean. I think because someone tweaked the ocean. Because, you know, that is one thought, oh, I forgot. As I was going back and after some time understood, okay, this is how it goes. 30 meters forward, 12 meters backward. I could understand, wait a minute, this is against the laws of nature. This is against everything I have heard about the movements of tides and low tide and high tide. This is against all the laws of what we learn in physics. This is extraordinary. This is breaching on a miracle. Yes, I remember that very clear. Good. My dear people, I have ended now. I'm not really proud of myself, but one little thing is, I was not so long. So we have, for those of you who need to leave us, still time to interact, you know, who leave us by the full hour. But I will be with you for some time afterwards, half an hour after the full hour. I will now turn to Hari Prasad, our host, to tell us all clearly how we will continue the session. But thank you very, very much for listening.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much. So if there's not an experience that you wanted to share with us, a meditation, then we can go into questions. I leave that to you.
Yes, I thought this time, I'm so much still, you know, I still feel it, the waves. Really, it's a feeling of uncertainty and being under the control, although I sit very safely on my seat here before. I thought, I have not prepared a meditation, but I might do one if I see the audience needs ones.
Perfect. Thank you. So we have a question from Vijay Mehta. You prayed that in my last minute, may I be in your presence. Question is, isn't the person that you pray to, isn't he always with us in our heart? Aren't we never abandoned? And also, I think there's another ask here. Can you explain why you didn't pray to save your life?
Thank you very, very much. When it happened, I was absolutely overwhelmed. I was panicking. But as I got calm and said, okay, what can help now? It's amazing. In the greatest panic, this calmness comes. And at that time, I just felt, whatever it is now, if this is my end, my destined end, I will accept it. But then I made a little human thing. I said, but if you think this can, you know, I wouldn't mind to also not die, but I was so calm, and I do not know how to explain this calmness. I only know that at the time of our worst moment, we are often graced with that peace. people who have been in deadly combat have told, I mean, my father and his friends have told me, it's just as if everything freezes and you now are not afraid any longer. It's an amazing security which is given in the consciousness. So on your second question, so I did not pray to, I mean, when I was panicking, I cried out, help and save and anything, you know, but I didn't direct it to anyone. I was just over, of course, my survival instinct was very strong. But then when I came to this moment of calmness, and I'm so thankful that you asked this, I resigned myself to whatever is the superior plan, the will. I know as a monk that there is the small ego who plans and plans and thinks and worries and suffers. And then there is a much higher place where you are there and you are understanding this world is like a cinema projection, like the projection in the cinema, a movie which is not the real reality. It is something which is a make-believe reality. And that is the moment when you come in that, when at least when I came into this place and I prayed, may you be there. You are wondering, but isn't there always a divine presence in the heart? Why do you have to pray to get this? Or if you are an atheist and listen to this, it could be a position. And you would think, well, either there is something or there is nothing. Prayer won't change anything. I can only explain it like this. We know theoretically that there is a Lord in the heart. We know theoretically, you seem to be a spiritual-minded person, that there is a divine shelter, Krishna, or today Rama, sapient state. But my dear listener, there is a huge difference between conceptual understanding, faithful believing and knowing. If you would know strongly that you are eternal, that you are just next to the Lord in the heart, your life would look entirely different. Free from all worries, and free from the hesitations that we all have when it comes to surrendering to a divine will. So in that moment, I prayed for knowing, not for believing. I prayed for being just in for if you would, the divine encounter, please be there, the divine meeting. Which, by the way, when you have only one of these encounters, you are forever changed, forever. One of these unfiltered encounters will forever change you. Thank you so much for your question. I hope in my fire I have not burned your inquisitive nature. You think, oh no, he's too much, he's a little on. But yes, I am on fire on the brinks of death, because it's not a theoretical presentation, it's something which is, I think, a visceral experience. Is that a good word in English? Good. Fine. Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm so eager to hear more about how you've been changed forever, but I think we can share that in the Q&A afterwards. I think we should bring this to a close for those who will need to leave. And we have more questions to come. But thank you so much, Satchinandan Swami. He's also joining us from Germany, and we have persons who are here from around the world, which is a great honor and a wonderful coming together. We're really excited for what's to come. We have two more episodes left in this series of On the Brink of Death, episode 4 next week and 5 on May 5th. So please join us and do invite your friends. If you think that there are others who will benefit from hearing from Satchinandan Swami and gaining these experiences, we would love to have them with us. They can register at the link which you registered at. Thank you. And Satchinandan Swami, would you want to just close?
Yes, for those of you who will leave us by the full hour, if I now remember this back, this moment back, I do know that pain has no memory. You know, the really heavy experiences of your life and all kinds of experiences, but them, they go away. They are forgotten. But I still like to revisit, even though they are not so close by as, you know, the 2 weeks after the incident. I go there and it helps me very much in my life. It is said, those who are philosophical, they keep death in front of their eyes because it helps them to use their time absolutely wisely. And this is something I want to say. That's why I agreed to give these lectures. They give me a lot of chance to go back to these places, to the things, to make the memories again strong and alive. And yes, then I will profit from them forever. Yeah, thank you all very much. Last thing I want to say is, the next episode, episode 4, will be a description when I was a victim of a massive armed attack. That is also quite dramatic. You will need to fasten your seat belts when you hear that. Good. So that is what comes next. You all smile, but it was really intense.
What an unbelievable life. My goodness. That was my inspiration in wanting to hear all of these experiences and make sure that everyone has that opportunity. I don't know how you've been graced with all of these. Graced sounds strange because they're really traumatic, intense, horrible experiences, and yet somehow you find the jewel within them that makes it worth it. And it's really an incredible privilege to have you share that with us in a way we could never experience otherwise. Thank you. So we bid you a wonderful week. We can't wait to be back with you next week. And please stay on if you can. We're about to get into some really interesting territory with some of the questions that are coming in.
Good. Yes, I welcome your questions.
Excellent. So we have a few questions around the real me. So you're talking about becoming the real me and praying from that place, finding the real me and really offering prayer from that space as being most impactful. One question is from Saurabh, how do you find the real me? And then we'll just relate a couple more questions to expand on that. So Scott is asking, sorry, first Anne. So what would be the symptoms? Like, how would you gauge that you are at the real me? How do you know that you're there? And Scott is asking, how do you learn to get to that place? So first, how do you find the real me? Then how would you recognize that you're there? And then what is the learning that might, this related to the first one, how do you find the real me? What learnings would be helpful here?
The Sanskrit scriptures have defined that there are three qualities of the real me. And I think when we hear them, we are both intrigued, and it, I hope it sounds true for you. The real me has something like an inner knowing. The real me is also not disturbed by the various anxieties which crowd the ego me, you know, the narrative which I keep telling myself again and again of who I am. It's the real me is not disturbed. And the real me is very, very, how to say it in good English? Glückselig is a German word. For lack of a better word, blissful. It feels very happy. When the real me gets covered by what you could call the false me, the false ego, various layers, almost like the layers of an onion, which are around the soft little core of the onion, are there, and they these layers need to be removed. And when they are removed, you feel this. You have this inner knowledge, this place of being absolutely free from disturbances. They just don't get to you. You notice them and you say, interesting, my mind is feeling this. Yes, not interesting, but I notice my mind feels this. And the real me will feel this inner, warm, expansive joy, expanding joy, you know, it gets bigger, without a so-called reason, you know, a new car or a new handy or a new a raise in your position or whatever. How to get there to this place of inner knowing, this place of being totally undisturbed, this place of great inner joy, you have to uncover the layers that have built around the real me and which now are covering it to such a degree that you don't experience this any longer. And for this, there is no other word than practice. I mean, I have heard about a Tibetan master who would tell all his people to sit and meditate, and when they were in meditation or trying, he shot a gun, and out of the shock, people got instant enlightenment. But this is really, I think, I can't imagine that this works. It is a nice little hagiography. From most, if not all of us, we get to the real me, to this enlightened state of being through dedicated spiritual practice. Something that you do every day, again and again, and something that wears away the covering, that takes away the different layers that are artificially put on you, and then you are there. I would like to tell you a little story of my spiritual master. When he was in his last days with us, he was very much emaciated. He could not move his body in walking on his own, and he was carried. One day he requested to be carried on the roof. Indian roofs have often a flat platform in order to get the warming suns of the rays, the sun rays on his body. And as he was moved up, he started to laugh. His body shook in laughter, and the ones who carried him said, could you tell us why you are laughing? And he was laughing so hard that he said, later, he was carried up. And then he said, I'm only a heap of bones with a little skin over it. My life is over, but still so much attention is given to this heap of bones. You know, we, in order to feel humor, you need to hear something in your cultural comprehension. But this is so incomprehensible that we think there's nothing funny about this. But yes, he had stepped outside of our cultural box. He looked at life in a total different way, in a realized way. He understood I'm eternal. And why make so much make so much fuss? Is that an English word? About a pile of bones. We can't laugh about it. We feel sorry for a person like that. But he is beyond our level of thinking and comprehension. There's life beyond the American mind. Ooh. There's life beyond the German mind even. Ooh. There's life beyond the Russian mind. And if you come to that state of the real me, you have a different perspective on it. Maybe I should... As I was talking, I was thinking maybe I should give my audience a more milder example. No, people who are really there, I know from my good friend, his teacher had done pulse diagnosis as an Ayurvedic doctor to the very end of his life. Then he said, I will now go. Is there anything you want to know? So my friend who was learning Ayurveda, this ancient medical science, said, no, I think you have taught me everything. And then this teacher said, when someone takes off the old and worn shirt, do you cry for them? No. My friend knew in what direction this would go. He didn't answer. He was shocked. Then his teacher said, okay. He went to his... he stayed in a cave which was made like a living room. There was a place where he could take shower. And my friend heard how he went in. He opened the door one more time and said, come back after 20, come inside after 20 minutes and then close the door. Then my friend heard the sounds of a bucket which was used, the sounds of water. His teacher was taking a shower, and after 20 minutes he went into the cave, and his teacher was not there. His old shirt was there, that is the body. It was lying on the place where his teacher rested, but he had left the body and moved on. This is the place of the real knowing. You know that you are spiritual. You know that you are part of something that is so much more wonderful than the little stories that you're telling about yourself. So you get there by regular practice. That's very important. This regular practice, which removes all the coverings and which equips you with these spiritual qualities. Someone who has regular practice, he often is shining. He very often looks much younger than he really is. And he is enthusiastic because he is in contact with a joyful place inside that most of us people, normal people, look for or crave for. So, yes. There was a third question very much connected with it. One was, how does it look like, this real me? What are the qualities? I gave you three. There are works which have many more, but let's not make things complicated. The second question was how to get there. But the third question was, please remind me.
I think it's covered.
It's good.
Yeah, it was about how do we recognize what are the learnings to be able to...
The learnings, yeah.
That you're
well, on the way to the real me or the real I, you will see versions which are not yet the real thing, which are on the way. But you will be able to discover them if you are sincere and want the real thing and don't want to stop with some, let us say, versions which are not yet what is the reality of your identity. Mm-hmm. Yes, what are the next questions?
Thank you. The next question is from Amit. How do we resist the temptation to rest on the knowledge that there is a divine plan as a crutch or an excuse to avoid taking personal responsibility for seeking that same divine shelter? How do we resist the temptation to rest on the knowledge that there is a divine plan as a crutch or excuse to avoid taking responsibility for seeking that divine shelter?
I can answer this very concisely, and I think we like sometimes concise answer. Well, you should know that there is a superior plan, but you should act as if things are dependent on you. This is very, very important. I gave a seminar, a program a little while ago, online program, and it was on prayer. I said, when you pray, there must be three things. One is the real, a real utterance, which is not just lip service, but a real utterance. Then, after the prayer, you should act, because the answer very often comes through the situations in which you find yourselves afterwards. If you use prayer and such things and meditation and all the things which you can do to get answers which you don't know as a crutch. You would just do your prayer, do your meditation, and then wait. But the answers will often come in a situational language. You know, you will meet people, they will say something to you, and boom, you know, you and so on. So after your meditation, after your sincere investigation, into how you could improve your life, and after all these processes which you choose to move forward, then act as good as you can and as if things are dependent on you. And then the answer will come. Sometimes you need to be a little patient, that may be necessary, silence where you need to be patient in order to mature more so that you can recognize the answer when it is before you. Yeah.
Thank you. We have a question from Natalia. How to not be afraid of death?
Whew. How to not be afraid of death? You have obviously to change your perspective. When you are totally identified with the body and do not know that there is anything beyond the senses, then you will always remain afraid of death, because the body has the survival instinct. It has this, and in other words, it must be afraid of death. But there are different levels which bring with it different perspectives. For instance, when you are convinced, so the first level is the sensual level. I only want these things which I can eat, which I can touch, which I can feel, which entertain me. That is the sensual materialist, yeah, that level. Sometimes every one of us is on that level. It is not good and it's not bad. It's just one level. The next level is where you are more interested on your purpose. What is my real purpose here? And I have seen people who are really in their purpose, in their dharma, as some would say, who are viewing death differently, especially if they are living or have lived according to their purpose. But then there is a level which you can only reach by spiritual growth. It is the level where you understand yourself as an eternal being. You know that life did not has not started with birth and does not end with death. It's something like a person who looks at the sun. He is knowing that the sun was not born in the morning, and he is also not arranging a funeral ceremony for the sun in the evening when the sun sets. He knows there is no birth and death for the sun. So in the same way, you lose your fear of death when you have realized the real me. And on the way, Natalia, on the way, you will have to be satisfied that you are ambivalent with your own death. Sometimes afraid, sometimes not so afraid any longer. What might help you is something that helped me tremendously. I have read once a book on dying. In fact, I read at the moment a book called The Final Examination. I mean, I don't read it steadily each day, but I come back and forth. There are the departures described of people who were on a high level, and I can see, oh, it was not so tough for them. They left their body just like you and me leave a room behind. They leave life like this behind. So in one word, perspective. It's about perspective and a realized perspective that will help you to lose the fear of death.
Excellent. Thanks. Ghislaine is saying she was struck by the transmission that you had received. Do not struggle with the ocean. And she's expressing that landed for her as a life lesson. And is it possible to expand a little bit more on that experience of receiving that divine transmission and the gift of those vibrations that were offered to you in that moment?
Yes, I have not understood your name very clearly, so I can't address you with your name, but we are looking here at acceptance. Many people struggle and fight with things they cannot change. And this struggle and fight makes life so absolutely difficult. You will not believe me, but I have seen the happiest people on earth amongst beggars. Really, who had nothing. In Mumbai, I visit them in the slums. In Calcutta, I visited. They were playing, the children were playing with stones, and they imagined the whole epic Mahabharata reenacted. They had only stones as toys. Why could the people be happy in this? Because they accepted it. This is something, this is my present situation. And I have seen people who panicked when they didn't have this, or didn't have a car, or had a little toothache, or anything, because they could not accept the situation. Like me, you know, in that ocean scenario. At first, I could not accept it. No, I won't die like a German tourist. This will not happen to me. But all I got is panic, and then things became even more dramatic. Then when I accepted the situation as it is, as it was placed for me, so many good things could happen. We waste so much energy in fighting against things we cannot fight. As you all listen, what I have just now shared with you from my honest experience could become dangerous if you do not add to this one more thing. Of course, the moment you go into a passive state of acceptance, you do not use any longer your skills, and you may not find the very, very simple and natural way out of a problem. with acceptance, I don't mean a type of inner numbness. I mean just a rational understanding of what is going on with the situation and coming to terms with it. And then using also your good intelligence to see that after you've accepted the situation and don't fight with it, see what are the ways out that are given to me at this moment. So translating this on the wave experience, and you have asked about this. When I was in the, when I got this transmission, then you are again pulled into the ocean with the receding water, then don't resist. That means I was giving one situation I have to accept, that is that I'm in the midst of the ocean and I can't just swim straight now out. Whoop. But I also got a clue what was a good way out. I want to make a drawing for you so that you can understand what this was. You know, oh, I'm so terrible in drawing, but we don't want a Picasso here. This is how the Canary Island looks. It comes from way down, up, and then there is the island. It is carried by a supportive mass of rock. So when the water, oops, when it is tight, the receding tide, then the water at, how do you move the hand here? At a very quick movement goes down, you know. Oops, I'm sorry, I'm getting lost here. It gets down and that pulls you out like anything. Imagine in such a scenario, what happens when the water, I'm not so good, I can't even drive a car properly. When it goes down, it is at, the force of the Atlantic Ocean is working on you. It's irresistible. It is not, no swimmer, even the best swimmer who has won 50 Olympiadic medals cannot fight against this type of water. But over this receding tide, which was going out, the only thing was that waves came, which is totally abnormal, and brought your humble speaker to the island, and. Therefore, the transmission. When the water pulls you out, don't try to resist it. There is no chance. There is no. I didn't know all this before. I asked the Canary Island people, and they drew this thing for me about their islands. When it comes, the only intelligent thing is don't resist. Aren't there forces in our lives which are almost as compelling as the Atlantic Ocean? And if they are, what could they be? Time is such a force. It makes us older. If we resist by using multiple facelifts, that will not cure the time problem. No, it will not use it. So within our aging, we have a lot of possibility to use our time wisely. We can accept our aging and at the same time find the good activities which bring us forward. There are many other examples of not resisting. For instance, I have stopped to resist that I'm such like that I'm Sachinanda Swami, and not like Rasanath, for instance, who is supremely intelligent. I have accepted myself, and in that acceptance, not resisting, I found many, many things that can be wonderfully done. Oops, I'm talking a little long. I'm looking at the time here. Everyone on this call, I thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. I try to present everything nicely, but I'm a little bit... See, today was a very high festival day, and I have risen very early, and I have done many spiritual practices and talked here, talked there, and now I feel the pangs of existential hunger. And we soon come to the time. I want to thank you very, very much. It would be my honor if we could be together for the next Wednesday.